Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. After a dramatic week off the pitch, today very much dominated by what went on it. So many talking points later on in the show. Don will be here to talk about Chelsea's draw against Liverpool, Manchester City thrashing Arsenal. Also, Gab Marcotti joining us to reflect on Juventus losing at home against Empoli. But for now, Shaka Hislop. You all right, Jay?
Yeah, I'm all right. You just made it sound like for now we have to settle for.
No, I didn't mean it like that.
I'm just telling you how it came up.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man who conceded Cristiano Ronaldo's first ever goal in the Premier League, Shaka Hislop, is here. Luis Garcia joins us as well as we kick things off in La Liga. Real Betis taking on Real Madrid. A lot of question marks about whether or not it should be Vinicius Jr. or Eden Hazard starting. Carlo Ancelotti going with the young Brazilian, and that almost paid off straight away. Lovely ball in to Benzema, who you expected to do better with.
Well, the ball in was a hopeful one. Intended for, I think it was Bale through the middle, but deflection takes in the path of Benzema, who you thought would have done better with that chance.
How would you rate this dive?
I gave it a solid 9.8 out of 10. A little bit too much splash for it to be a perfect 10.
Yeah, the referee not buying it, and rightly so. Into the second half we go now. We pick the action up here. Real Betis with the opportunity to break the deadlock. However, they lose possession of the ball. Real Madrid then on the counter-attack. And boy, would they make Real Betis pay for losing possession? Nice move here from Vinicius. Plays it back inside. Karim Benzema picks the pass. And Dani Carvajal, with his first goal in almost 2 years, makes it 1-0.
Yeah, there's so much about this play. Betis up the other end, 2v1, wasteful. Real Madrid come down the other end. Vinicius just about keeping the ball in. It was in. Betis defenders seem to just stop, hands go up. And then Carvajal comes around far post, unmarked, unseen, and produces a wonderful volley.
It looked like that would be enough, but then late on, Real Betis with the opportunity. Courtois making the save.
Not the cleanest of strikes you'll ever see. Courtois does make up an awful lot of ground. In the end, a comfortable save for a goalkeeper, showing the kind of form that he has for the last couple of seasons.
It's a nice opportunity there for Betis, but in the end, they couldn't get past Courtois as it finishes. Real Betis 0, Real Madrid 1. As promised, Luis Garcia is with us. Luis, let's start off, I suppose, by focusing on the fact that Carlo Ancelotti, I imagine, will be most happy today after what he said last week after conceding 3 against Levante, that he had a clean sheet here today.
Yeah, definitely. And also for the reaction of his football players in the second half. I think the Real Madrid approach a lot better the second half, a little bit more intensity, more will of going forward. And well, that's what we saw. And finally, they got that first goal. Probably not because they deserve it that much, because they were controlling the second half, but they didn't kind of create a lot of threat against Real Betis that they were comfortable on the pitch. But at the end, there are 3 massive points for the Real Madrid, even though that is not the best game. But we could see also Hazard in the second half doing some good things. So that's something very positive as well to take away from this game.
Well, Luis, that's a big thing, isn't it? This kind of Hazard, Vinicius, Bale, Benzema conundrum. Like, Bale did nothing in the first half, maybe contributed a bit better after the break. But it's tricky for Ancelotti, I imagine, to try to juggle all these balls and keep everybody happy, especially when you've got youngsters chomping at the bit to come on, yet you've got the likes of Hazard and Bale who are on so much money.
Yeah, exactly. Big name, big history on these players' past. But at the end, it's about performing. And Ancelotti has proved it today. Hazard didn't perform well in the first 2 games. And today, he decided to put Vinicius in the left side. He did very well. Mm. At the end, he gave the chance also to Hazard on the right side. But I enjoyed today watching Hazard a little bit with that free role that he had. I think enjoys also very much as well to try to get in the pockets, not stick on one of the sides where he normally doesn't have the ball as much. So I think green roots for Sprouts for this team, that at least they got the 3 points and they continue at the top of the table.
Dani Carvajal, of course, given the start today as well ahead of Lucas Vazquez, not a prolific goal scorer, Luis. Obviously, this all started, didn't it, here with Betis in possession before they lost the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Bad decision taken for Juanmi at the front. And it comes from to that kind of a concept that I thought at the beginning, yeah, it's not that much. The Real Betis are under control. You can see there are six places at the box, but very, very bad communication. You can see Carvajal coming in the second half, in the second post, and Canales doesn't track back. Carvajal is his mark, and he arrived in the second post, free mark. Great touch. First goal for Real Madrid, well-deserved, because I think the counter-attack was well-organized, but at the end, I think very poor defensive from this Real Betis side.
Yeah, overall, Luis, they're just getting it done. Just enough so far, obviously. Two wins out of three. That draw with Levante as well leaves them unbeaten so far this season. But not really getting you too excited with the style in which they play. Obviously, it's a team in transition, especially at the back, which we mentioned before. Alaba in the centre today. His preferred role, clearly, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I enjoy it. I think that it was a fantastic couple, the partnership that they that he did with Militao. I think they did very well. I have to mention as well, Miguel Gutierrez in the left side, I think, was for me, was man of the match. I think that kid is a fantastic, and he's got a bright future in this Real Madrid side. In that left side, he proved it last year when he had a few good games with Real Madrid, and it's a very important that these young players arrive surrounded by important experienced players like Alaba, that today did a great job at the back.
Big story, of course, off the pitch around at Real Madrid over the last few days is the possibility of killing Mbappe making that move from PSG. Instagram today, sunshine emoji plus soccer emoji equals happy emoji. Picture with him and Lionel Messi. Gab, that's it, isn't it? He's never going to Real Madrid. After this sort of post, there's no possibility he can ever move. Technical issues. Gab will be saying no. I completely agree with you, Dan. The deal is off. They're going to try and...
That'll be the first time Gab has ever said those words. I agree with you, Dan.
Yeah, that's very true. Luis, from a professional player's standpoint, just take us into the psyche of Kylian Mbappe, where you can play with Lionel Messi and you can play with Neymar and your possibility of winning the Champions League is much greater than making the move to Real Madrid now. He obviously supported the club when he was a kid growing up. It was always his dream to play at Real Madrid, but that's still going to be there in 12 months' time.
Yeah, but you never know what is going to happen in 12 months' time. At the end, it's about what is happening at the moment. I think Mbappé made it very clear for a long time ago when he was a kid, he was supporting Real Madrid. He's got a chance. We've been linked to Real Madrid for quite a few years, and now he kind of realized that Real Madrid wants him very much. He's making Real Madrid a big move, trying to pay a big money transfer for him, even though that they know that next year maybe he's going to be free to join them. But at the end, you never know. And his will to go to Real Madrid is just massive. I think he wants to be a big star in the Real Madrid side, the capital of Spain. And I think at the end, he will make that move. We don't know if it's going to happen in the next 3 days, but at least it's what he's got in his mind. And when a player is in that position, it doesn't matter what you got next to you. It doesn't matter what you think that your team is going to make at the end of the season. If you want to win Champions League or your domestic league, at the end, what you want is to have your mind straight away and try it. If you thought that you want to go to Real Madrid, just make the move. If not, you're going to be unhappy at Paris Saint-Germain. You're not going to enjoy playing football. So at the end, Paris Saint-Germain knows that he has to let him go.
But how could you not enjoy playing football with Messi?
I understand. If you tell me right now, of course, I will tell you. In my opinion, at the end, it's about different characters. For me, it was about enjoying, but it happens to me as well when I was a player. I wanted to play for Barcelona. I have to go out and do a lot of things, get experience, go to Atletico Madrid, go to Valladolid, to finally arrive to Barcelona. Once I was in Barcelona, my hometown, I had to make the decision, stay and have my chance of playing with the likes of Ronaldinho, Deco, Juli, Eto'o. Those are the players that I was next to them, or move to Liverpool. It was a key and important moment for me, and I decided to go to Liverpool. So at the end, it's about the moment that you are and the feelings that you have. I made that decision. I moved to Liverpool, and I had a fantastic 3 years there. So Mbappé, is in this moment. Yeah, I got Neymar next to me. I got Messi. I got Berardi. I got so many big players. But at the end, I want to play for Real Madrid. So if I'm happy there, I'm going to play even better.
Apparently, our technical issues have been fixed now. Gab Marcotti, what is the latest with Mbappe's possible move to Real Madrid?
The latest is that there's no news. That's what Paris Saint-Germain are saying, that that they've rejected the bid, that they're going to continue rejecting bids. Now, we'll find out if it's true, if they get the bid that was mooted, the 220 million euros. My sense, though, is that I think the ship has sailed, as you mentioned before, Mbappe's post today as well. Not really the kind of thing you're going to put out and then say, all right, I'm off to Real Madrid in the next 48 to 72 hours. That said, you know, you said before, never. No, I think as of January 1st, as we've mentioned many times, Mbappe can commit to Real Madrid. I think that's a far more likely scenario. And then he joins them next season. And as I've said many times, that 180 million that Real Madrid are saving themselves, well, hey, they can give some of that to Mbappe, some of that to his dad, some of that to his mom, and use the bulk of it to make sure that those great players around him that Luis was talking about a second ago, to make sure that they can bring those guys into Real Madrid and rebuild the squad next season when there's so many top players who are going to be free agents, including his friend Paul Pogba.
Gab says Paul Pogba off to Real Madrid next season. To keep up to date with all the latest of that transfer news, be sure to check it out over on the website.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Meanwhile, in the Premier League today, of course, the big game was at Anfield. Liverpool taking on Chelsea, and it would be Chelsea who would open the scoring. Lovely header from Havertz to make it 1-0. Then the visitors had a good couple of chances to extend their lead, didn't take them. Then on the stroke of half-time, Reece James sent off for a handball on the line, penalty awarded as well. Salah would score it. 1-1. Chelsea then would hang on the second half. A very impressive defensive display, to be fair. And that would be the final score. Well, let's welcome to the show, shall we? Don and Luis are here to reflect on what happened at Anfield. Let's start, shall we, with the red card. Don, for you, the right decision?
100%. Reece James makes a sort of sweeping movement with his hand, which wasn't actually spotted in real time. It was very difficult to try and spot because the melee was happening inside the six-yard box. But once you see the replay, and it didn't just ricochet off his thigh and hit his hand, there was a forward motion. So even in that melee, he thought it was a little bit harsh. The law says he has to go, and Anthony Taylor got it absolutely spot on for me.
Don, why is everybody saying it's controversial?
I don't know whether they've been caught up in the moment, whether they feel as though the punishment should have just been a penalty. But you look at the facts and you look at the law. It's a clear red card. He had to go. It was just before half time. So I think lots of people, especially on social media, are looking and thinking Reece James was dealt a harsh card there. But when you see it, it's blatantly obvious to me that if there wasn't a forward motion, if it ricocheted off his thigh and hit his hand, I might say it was accidental. It was a little bit harsh. But when you see it again, you see that forward motion, the push, because I think he panics.
Right.
It's an easy thing to panic when you're on the line and you're just trying to get some sort of contact on the ball. You're not sure where it's coming off. It's then come off your thigh. It hits your hand. And then he panics and makes that forward motion. So that's what's done it for me.
Jack?
I thought it was a penalty, no question. I thought the red card was a little bit harsh. But I'm with Don in seeing why Anthony Taylor interpreted as he did. For me, I think the ball comes off of Regime's thigh and onto his arm, so it's unintentional, but the consequence is it keeps the ball out of the net. I think after it hits his arm, the forward motion that Don is describing comes subsequent to the ball being hitting his arm. So I'm siding with Reece James here a little, and I give him the benefit of the doubt.
Now, this is what frustrated Thomas Tuchel-Shaka after the game, because he said, basically, Anthony Taylor, if you saw the VAR, he literally, we're off.
Right.
And he just saw the freeze frame. He said, I would like to have seen him see the whole video to get the context of it.
I understand Thomas Tuchel's position, but I also hear the criticism around how long some of these reviews take. And referees are kind of tasked with reviewing the incidents, keeping the game moving, not keeping players waiting too long. So it's a difficult balancing act for the referees in getting that right. They're not going to please everyone. So you accept that on this occasion it's Thomas Tuchel who's not the happiest. But ultimately, though I don't think it was a red card, I can't say it was, you know, it was that big an error. You know, it's one of those that I see the other side to that same coin.
Gab?
For me, it wasn't a penalty. I think Tuchel's right. He gave it, I suppose, within the context of the fact that Reece James is making his body bigger and, you know, you get into the unnatural position and the silhouette or whatever else. But for me, what clinches it is the ball comes off his thigh. It's a ricochet. And in those cases, referees have directives that they're asked to follow. If you only looked at the freeze frame, and I'm not 100% sure that's accurate, but if what Tuchel says is accurate and he only looked at the freeze frame, well, I think that's clearly an incorrect decision. But I will say this, at least we have Anthony Taylor, one of the top referees in England, taking the time to look at it. And then the one other thing, though, Shaka, you can't make excuses. Well, he doesn't have time. He needs to keep the game moving. This is what VAR is there for the big decisions. If you're going to send off a player and give a penalty in send off a player in the first half in a game between the two teams that are sitting at the top of the table in the Premier League, I want you to take all the time that you need. This is not a routine call. This is something really important. And I really would hate to think that Taylor felt the need, oh, I better get done with this because otherwise I'll be holding up the game and the fans won't know what's going on and VAR is taking too long.
Luis, penalty or no penalty?
I still don't understand why people say that it is not a penalty or a red card, because it's so easy to understand. I touch the ball with my hand. It is true that he touched the thigh and it goes up. And the moment that you stop the ball with your arm, scooping it out and don't allow the ball to go in, or even if it's not going in, you put it out of the goal, it's a penalty and, of course, a red card because you stop the ball to go to the goal. So I saw a lot of things said in social media. I understand the people, but it's so easy to understand and so easy to see. The ball is scooped out from with the arm of Reece. As you can see, that the ball goes up and his arm goes forward, stopping the ball going in. Right here, there you go. So there is no way that people say that it's not a penalty because you can see the intention of touching the ball. That's it, penalty and red card.
Gap?
Like I said, for me, this falls under the referee's discretion. For me, I probably wouldn't have given it, but then I can understand why he's given it. What I struggle with, though, is this idea that he's got to go and look at it quickly and then move on from it. The whole point of seeing the incident in real time, and then you see it slowed down, so you understand the dynamic. And I think what Luis broke down there perfectly, I thought, is the judgment of the dynamic of the incident. Yes, normally when it's a ricochet, you tend not to give it, but then if you feel that there was a forward movement and you think that there's intent involved, you give it. There is still discretion. This idea that the laws of the game are cut and dried and referees have no discretion anymore when it comes to handball is incorrect. They have guidelines. If Taylor's comfortable with those guidelines and he had a good look at it, then I'm fine with it. I just don't want to hear people talking about, oh, how could he slowed down the game or he only looked at the freeze frame. If that's the case, then it's just wrong.
Let's move on from the incident, shall we? The game overall was thoroughly entertaining, Luis. Is it a missed opportunity, though, for Liverpool, considering they were playing against 10 men for the second half?
No, well, of course, when you play against a top team, you know that it's going to be difficult and there is a chance that you make a small gap between you and them, but it's very difficult. I tried to explain, again, in social media, and I'm trying to explain here, when you play against 10 men, it's even more difficult than when you play against 11, because you tend, when you play with 10 men, you know that you have to make an extra effort. You go back, you drop back, and you get very compact. You don't allow, or the manager doesn't allow many players to go forward, to don't leave space for the other team. And you don't want to get tired because you know that it's going to get intense. In 45 minutes, there is a lot of run. So at the end, people doesn't understand that it's very difficult. When you got 9 players in front of you and you have to try to break in 20 meters, there is no way. It's very difficult. Maybe a mistake from there, maybe got rebounds. That's why Liverpool has been trying from outside the box, I think in a very good way, try to make a strike from outside the box to try to make the defense and midfielders go out to stop those close down to those shots. But at the end, it's very difficult. There is no space. And we are talking about one of the best in Premier League defending and improved it last year. So not easy. I think it's a good point that you take against Chelsea, thinking about that you were losing in the first half. So I think a good point and moving forward.
Don, how cool is it to see Anfield at full capacity for such a big game?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, the atmosphere was there, the adrenaline was there, the colour, the noise. It's always goosebumps when you're here. You'll never walk alone before the game. And it was like, even the Chelsea fans, to be fair, they created a brilliant atmosphere. But the game was super intense. You know, the first half, I thought the pace that the both teams set was electric. I think, and with Louis, in terms of how difficult it is to play against 10 men, it can be hard. I think Chelsea had 8 outfield players behind the ball, Lukaku up front on his own, trying to sort of conjure some little magic when the ball went up to him. But at the same time, I think when you get to half time and you come out 1-1, second half kicking towards the top end, I would like to have thought, when Jurgen Klopp does the analysis of that game, his team could have created more chance. But it was a wonderful game of football to watch.
It was fun, wasn't it, Shan?
It really was. And listen, Chelsea played their part as well. Despite being down to 10 men, as the boys rightly point out, they sit deep, they soak pressure up, but they have an outlet in Romelu Lukaku, who at times provided opportunities for Chelsea to at least threaten Liverpool's goal. It wasn't just one of those where they sat back and did nothing for 45 minutes. So it quite easily could have swung the other way, but if you're Liverpool and you're at home and you're against Chelsea, even at Chelsea down to 10 men, and you come up with just a point, you feel it's a missed opportunity. You feel that game could have given you a whole lot more. At home, 11-11, you're thinking, as Liverpool, you're thinking you can win this game 11-10. I don't see why accepting a point is some kind of consolation.
Luis, kind of my takeaway from this game is how Chelsea have evolved so much over Thomas Tuchel, and they are very much now a big boy, a big contender in the Premier League.
Yes, they are, because the way they approach every single game is just fantastic. They build from the back. It's a team that is very well organized, very composed, with those three centre backs and with an amazing creativity up front. I think with Lukaku, now they got a different situation there, because you know that you can play forward, he can hold the ball, he can drop the ball that back to get Mount, to Havertz, to Pulisic. They got so many good players who can play in those positions. And when you get Jorginho, the best player last year, you get Kante in the middle, you got Kovacic, players who can get the ball, break lines, bring the ball forward. I think there is a total team. You got a fantastic player in every single line. And that way of pressing very high to try to exhaust every single player when they got the ball, I think it's just fantastic. I enjoy watching them play, and I think they are a big contender to win the Premier League this year.
Don, from a Liverpool perspective, how concerning is it? We talked about this a lot, haven't we? There's a sense that if the front three aren't firing on all cylinders, you don't really know where the goals are going to come from.
No, I think that's a fair comment, Dan, but I think that's always been the case for Liverpool. They've never really scored too many goals from midfield, so the engine room in there has to make sure that's functioning for the front three to get their goals. I thought Harvey Elliott, I thought, was outstanding today. For a youngster playing at Anfield in this sort of atmosphere against title contenders Chelsea, I thought he was outstanding. I thought Liverpool looked a better side when Jota came on. I thought they looked a little bit more of a threat. I understand when Firmino's in, you know, how good and technically good he can be for the midfield players around him. But that is a worry. But just going on to Chelsea just very quickly, I think that's the difference when you have someone like Thomas Tuchel in charge. When you get an elite manager in charge of your football club, they produce results like that. Backs against the wall, you know, dogged display. At halftime, he said his team were fighting for them. All the characteristics of what you want from a title contender. But that comes from the manager. That is an elite manager, that. But that was a game of football where I think both managers before the game, if you said to Jurgen Klopp and Thomas Tuchel, would you take a point? I think they'd say yes. Under the circumstances, Liverpool have dropped two. But listen, both teams unbeaten and are sitting close to the top of the league. So not a bad weekend for both.
Meanwhile, at the other end of the league, Arsenal rock bottom. After their 5-0 defeat against Manchester City, not a single shot on target. Of course, Arteta under huge pressure. Let's just give him some lip service for his complaint after the game. For the second goal from City, he said it should have been disallowed because of the punch in the build-up. Don, I just wonder what you make of it.
Yeah, not really, not for me. I think the defender has to be stronger there. I think there's a little bit of contact. The referee, you know, didn't really see it in real time. VAR had a quick look at it and decided it wasn't sort of high tariff. It wasn't worth punishing Ferran Torres for it. I thought it was a little bit of an excuse for Mikel Arteta, in all honesty. I think he was clutching. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, I got asked what I thought formation he would go for, and I got the formation correct, but I was way off in terms of his personnel. I didn't see where Kolasinac would come into his starting 11. I didn't see where Martin Ødegaard would come in as a holder midfield player. You know, Elneny was on the bench. If you want someone to graft, put Elneny in. If you're going to go, you know, and be defensive against Man City, go with the grafting team. So his team and his formation and the personnel were all over the shop today, and every single goal could have been avoided. The third goal was the most embarrassing one, when Ederson had the ball at his feet and he played a straight ball into Ferran Torres, which took out the whole Arsenal midfield. And then the lack of tracking back from everyone was just astonishing. And it was 5 going on 7 or 8. It was that easy for City.
And of course, Arsenal, being Arsenal, would shoot themselves in the foot, Xhaka the red card 10 minutes before the break. Luis, was this the right decision for you?
No, for me, it wasn't the right decision. I think the Xhaka goes strong. I think the ball is 50-50. It's true that maybe the foot, I think it's the right foot, the left foot, goes a little bit higher, but because he goes, you can see that it's no intention on hurting the player. He goes straight to the ball. And I think if he goes to check on the bar, I think you can see the intention. Sometimes I think that's why VAR is over there. And I think I said it before, you have to go and check. It's a red card. I think it makes the intention of getting the yellow card. And I don't know why, or if he heard something in his ear and he goes and takes the red card. I think for me, a yellow would have been enough for everybody on the field, because even the players from City, they were surprised with that red card.
Red card. Listen, I understand Luis's point. Even as a City player, you've got the beating of Arsenal with 11 players. So if he sees a yellow, nobody from City complains. But any time a player coming onto a challenge leaves both feet and lunges in like that, it's going to be a red card every single time. And as we were discussing before, you only need one look. To Gab's point with the Reece James handball, you need one look. You don't need to see that at different speeds. Xhaka leaves 2 feet and jumps into a challenge. You don't need, nobody needs to have multiple looks at that. That's a red card every single time, regardless of who it is or what the scoreline may be.
Away from that decision, Lewis, it is an indictment, isn't it, of where Arsenal are, that they lose 5-0 against Manchester City. And I don't think anyone's really surprised.
Yeah, the way the Arsenal has been in the past year, maybe 2 years, it goes down and down. I think we are all surprised. We remember those Arsenal performances back in the 2004, 5, 6, where they were winning the league. And I think we all expect a lot more from this. I understand that they are in transition. I understand that Arteta is trying to implement a philosophy and a way of play. But at the end, you have to understand that if the players don't have the confidence, if they don't feel comfortable the way that you want them to play, they are not going to perform well. And if you're going to play against Manchester City, try to adapt your way of play, try to adapt the system, because if not, you can receive 5, 6, even 7, like we've seen today, 5 goals, that it could have been a lot more. So, yeah, it's a pity to see Arsenal this way. A big, big, big concern with Arteta for this year, and we'll see if he arrives to this transfer window at this on Wednesday or maybe in January.
Don, you're one of the most optimistic of our Scottish pundits, but I think even going to you and asking for some semblance of light at the end of that Arsenal tunnel, It's almost difficult to find anything, isn't it?
It's bizarre. I'm not sure what their plan is, Dan. I mean, when they sacked Unai Emery, he was 1 point off the top four and he got into a Europa League final. Then you decide to get rid of Unai Emery, who's got a good understanding of the game, very experienced manager who's been around the block. If that's your call, go and get one of the elite managers, like we were saying about Thomas Tuchel, you go elite. They've gone and give a manager his very first job in football. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm not an advocate of sacking managers. But I got asked a question today, what should Arsenal do? And I just said, I'd go all out for Brendan Rodgers. And someone said to me, why would he leave Leicester to go to Arsenal? Mm. And I'm trying to, like Louis said before, I'm trying to grasp on to the fact that Arsenal are still a massive football club and a huge name across the world. But the way it's going, teams like Leicester are getting above them. I'm not saying West Ham are above them, they are in the league. But in terms of size of football club, Arsenal are going backwards. So their next decision is a massive one. And he's got to make sure, Mikel Arteta, that he gets a good result. And when I say a good result, a win against Norwich and a win against Burnley. That's their next two games in the Premier League. Otherwise, there could be another change.
Gab, I've seen Antonio Conte already linked to Arsenal. Is there any truth in that? Or is that people just putting, well, here's a manager without a job, here's a job that's going to be available soon. That makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of feel it's like that. I mean, my understanding is, Don mentioned Norwich and Burnley. Look, they played Chelsea and City in their last two games, right? So you weren't looking for points. You were looking for performance and improvement. There certainly was. The boys are saying there certainly was no improvement in this game. But to rip up the script now, I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to see where they are in those next two games and see if what Arteta wants to do. And remember, he's also had a whole bunch of injuries and players unavailable and whatnot, and see where that takes them. I think the difficulty, though, to go back to Conte, is that Conte, I think we all know, demands investment in the team. He demands money. And I think Arsenal are pretty hamstrung right now because of all those massive contracts they gave out to Aubameyang, to Willian, to guys like this. You know, you give huge contracts to people who are in their 30s, you pay the price. And on top of that, of course, you have Lacazette too, who still hasn't renewed. He could well leave as a free agent in June. You know, that's not a great situation to go in, because then you got to chuck more money at it. And of course, they spent money this summer as well on Odegaard. So, you know, you put those things together. I don't know that the appeal is there for Conte unless the Cronkies are willing to pull out the checkbook again. I'm not saying he's just a checkbook manager, but where Conte goes, you know, investment has to be there. Otherwise, he'll hold up for another big job.
Meanwhile, Manchester City scoring goals for fun. Who needs Harry Kane or indeed Cristiano Ronaldo? It is the big story everywhere, hasn't it, over the last 24 hours. This extraordinary twist, of course, that saw on Thursday Cristiano Ronaldo going to Manchester City. And then on Friday, he's officially back at Manchester United. Don, it's the first time I've had a proper chance to talk to you about this. How cool is it?
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, the story of him going to Man City would have been a pretty cool one, but going back to Man United, it's just a brilliant story. And I think I sent out a tweet this afternoon. Someone asked me why he's gone there. And I was trying to get across in as many characters or words as I could that, you know, once he goes and plays at Old Trafford again, he's going to be adored. The adulation he's going to get from the fans. There's going to be a buzz around Old Trafford. That's exactly what Ronaldo wants. He wants his ego fed. He wants trophies. He wants to play in front of fans that absolutely adore him. And that's the reason why he's gone there. I think if he went to City, it would have been a magnificent story. Mm. It would have been great. It would have been great for Man City and probably good for Ronaldo as well. But going back to United just feels special because, you know, you get the feeling that United are going a bit Galactico style, which is just amazing for them. And this just tops it off. I mean, it's just an incredible signing, I think.
And it just, I imagine, Luis, gives everybody a lift. You've got the fans, of course, who are loving all of this. And it's got to have an effect on the players in the squad as well.
Yeah, exactly. At the end, the effect that is going to have to... Well, you've seen the reception he's got on social media from a lot of the players are for Man United. So at the end, the quality that he's going to bring, the effect of giving a lot of confidence to players that they're going to play next to him, they know that this is a winner. The Cristiano, if he arrives to Manchester United, he doesn't want to arrive there just to retire himself. He wants to win. And when you bring a player with that personality, with that character, you know there is a knack, something that I think is missed in Manchester United in the past couple of 3 years, where you could see that there was no leaders inside the dressing room. I think we heard from many pundits saying, listen, we need leaders in the Manchester United side, because at the end it's a young team with a lot of young players coming out. And you can see that there is no players who can push, who can lead when the things are not going well. So this kind of personality is going to stick inside very quick. He knows the club. He knows what they are expecting from him. And he's going to deliver, because at the end, Cristiano Ronaldo, he's got something that he does. He's delivered.
Luis, I know it's late in Ibiza, but I want to ask you one last question.
Go ahead.
What happened to the vase behind you over your left shoulder compared to the one on the right? It looks like someone dropped it and then has stuck it all back together compared to the one
that... They are my kids. I don't know. Where are you saying? This one here?
Yeah, so that's a nice one. And then the one on your left just looks a complete shambles.
Yeah.
What can I say? Tell them to my miss. He's the one who makes the backdrop, maybe. I can't do it.
Luis Garcia, thank you very much. Cheers, a reminder, the Premier League, of course, continues on Sunday. Some of the other results today. Nice for Rafa Benitez. 2-0 win away against Brighton. Meanwhile, Leicester defeating Norwich by 2-1. West Ham remain top of the table, Shaq.
That's absolutely right.
Against Crystal Palace. Sunday, also Spurs against Watford. Burnley against Leeds. Wolves play host to Manchester United. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. In Italy today, Juventus losing 1-0 against Empoli. Gab Marcotti with us. Gab, how did this happen?
Juventus were abysmal. And, you know, we've seen this before with Allegri early on in the season. They have horrendous performances like this one. But he mixed things up. He tried McKennie further forward. He had a poor game. Adrian Rabiot was shockingly bad. He tried with sort of Chiesa and Dybala together. That didn't work. They tried to get back into it in the second half after Morata, Kulusevski, and whatnot. Things picked up a little bit, but it was fully, fully deserved by Empoli, who were just hungrier. They were well organized, and they simply played much better football.
How did Allegri explain this performance after the match, Gab?
Well, he said, you know, he pulled out the usual stuff about needing to mature. And look, to be fair to him, you know, Manuel Locatelli came on. He needs to start, right? This is the whole issue. You need somebody in the middle of the park with that personality. Bentancur was another one who I thought was really poor on the day. And, you know, Danilo had to play in the middle of the park, not ideal. But I think it goes deeper. I think this team really, really hasn't gelled yet. And Empoli deserve credit. Now, I know people are going to say, oh, look, you know, Cristiano's gone and now the wheels come off. I don't think it's quite that simple. Juve had issues before, and I think got even worse. I don't know that, you know, Cristiano would have necessarily changed the whole narrative today when the other 10 players on the pitch were all quite poor.
Thanks, Gab. Of course, Friday saw Inter make it 2 wins out of 2 with a 3-0 victory over Hellas Verona. On Saturday, Lazio thrashed Spezia by 6-1. Atalanta, meanwhile, can only manage a 0-0 draw against Bologna. And Sunday sees Milan and Roma both in action.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Kurt Zouma is officially a West Ham player after making the switch from Stamford Bridge for 30 million euros. And why is that significant in our
world? Because West Ham are top of the Premier League table.
Yes, indeed. Why that is significant, Sevilla play today without Koundé at the back. Koundé, then, you imagine, will be making that move from La Liga to the Premier League and to Chelsea, Gab.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a lot of the reports indicate that the deal had been in place for some time. Chelsea wanting to shift Kurt Zouma before they did that. I think they're happy that they got that 30 million back because Chelsea, I think as of a week ago, they had 38 players in their first team. They need to shed players, they need to shed wages, bring some money in. And Koundé, I think, is important for them defensively because, you know, when you look around, you've got Antonio Rudiger, with his contract expiring, you've got Thiago Silva, who's going to be 37, I think, at some point. You know, you have Christensen, who's in everybody's cup of tea. You've got Azpilicueta, who, great as he is, you know, he's 32, nearly 33 now, I think. So, you know, they want to get younger in that spot. They want to add quality. Obviously, Koundé's got all those things. Smaller type defender, so you assume that he'll probably slot on the side, on one of the sides in that back three.
Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you very much. Now, fans will know in La Liga, it used to be Segunda B. Well, we now have kind of had them all put together and you have the third tier of Spanish football. And this is its first ever goal. My crikey, Shaq.
This is certainly one for the record books. That clearance, I'm not sure what the keeper is doing. I'm not sure we'll ever forget that goal.
It's something a bit special, isn't it? That is it. Thank you very much for watching. What a show we've had. You want more, you say?
Yeah.
Do you want to hear from Don Hutchinson?
Why not?
Well, why not? Stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. I am scrambling, Shaka, for my questions.
I'm still laughing at that glass goal we just saw.
In the third tier of La Liga football.
Yeah, yes,
of course,
that was good.
The first level one.
What are you looking for?
Keep going, Shaka, all the questions.
What are you looking for?
Oh, I've got so much paper here.
But look at the mess.
I found it. Crikey.
Get your life in order.
What do you mean? Listen. What do you have to do?
Your shot sheets represent your life in general. That's the whole problem right here. You're just all over the place. Right. Don't know where you're coming or going.
Shut up. Gab, so that's Don. You've been waiting a long time. Do you enjoy hearing us do the show and sitting through it all? Good. Don's audio's broken. Oh, there he's back.
I like it when you fiddle with your papers.
The way Shaka couldn't say Niederlechner, so you just said it really quick.
Yes.
Yeah. Said it rapid.
And I'm sure I said the newly promoted team to Serie A very wrong, Gab. Just remind me how I should have said it. Who's playing Roma on Sunday?
Salernitana.
Yes. I'm going to leave that to you, Gab.
I like my Niederlechner better than that.
From the beautiful town of Salerno.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, good. There you go.
Is it time for Arsenal to bring in a manager who's built for the relegation fight? Wow. Come on.
That's
a bit
harsh. New manager, but not...
No, like Big Sam...
No!
Big Sam or Tony Pulis.
No!
Dear me.
No.
Surely it's not that bad.
Oh, my goodness.
Can't be.
It's bad. It's just not that bad yet.
If Arsenal get relegated, can Shaka run for TNT president? Why are those two... I suppose it's kind of extremes, isn't it? If that can happen, you could become president.
Why is that an extreme? I can't become president?
You certainly can, Shaq. You got your papers are tidy.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So why you draw that parallel?
For Gab. Let's not forget, Gab didn't think it was a penalty in the Chelsea-Liverpool match. Do Premier League officials analyse referees' performances against specific teams to see if there are potential biases? This isn't the first time Taylor has made controversial calls against Chelsea and he has refereed quite a few games. Oh, a bit of Twitter conspiracy, Gab. That's what we want in our lives.
I think even before you reach the Premier League, once you move up the PGMOL, which is the body that runs the referees, they go and they check all your social media, they check all your past to see if there's any hint about who you might be supporting. I think off the cuff a little bit, sometimes it's certainly happened in the past that teams have complained about certain referees, but I don't really think it's been an issue of bias, and certainly not when it comes to Anthony Taylor, who, you know, I don't think the standard of Premier League referees is particularly high right now, but Anthony Taylor is rightly or wrongly considered one of the better ones. So I think it just comes down to the interpretation. Some people agree with it, some people are not. But I'll tell you what, having spoken, wow, just a brief digression, having spoken to a well-known Italian referee from the 1980s a while back, and he told me something that if I were to hypothetically want to favor one team in a game, I probably wouldn't do it around a big call that everybody looks at. Mm. There's so many little things that you can do during a game if you want to be biased and smart about it that people aren't going to notice. And those words really resonated with me because obviously it has happened before in Serie A. I think we can give Mr. Taylor a pass here when it comes to bias, whether you agree with his decision or not.
I think Kieran is a Chelsea fan. Because let's be honest, I mean, he's saying it's a controversial decision, and okay, maybe it is. Between the three of us on the show, Gab didn't think it was a penalty. I thought it was a penalty, but no red card. And Don thought, yep, a stonewall penalty and a red card. But let's be honest, I am sure there have been far more controversial decisions just this weekend alone.
Right.
Than that.
You're waving your hands around, Shane. Yeah. Don, you've obviously played for kind of a whole spectrum of clubs. When you were at Liverpool, did you feel you got more calls than, for example, when you're at Sheffield United?
Not really.
Shaq, are you all right?
I never thought there was any bias. I never thought there was any big team mentality that the referees... I've always trusted our referees. Whether they make the right calls every time, probably not, but I never thought there was any bias or any cheating or any leniency towards big clubs. I never got that feeling.
Shaka, you've gone on record. You say big clubs get the big calls.
Yeah, Don never thought that there was any controversy because you used to get all the big calls. That's why.
Sheffield United.
Just saying. I'm just saying.
He didn't talk about
Sheffield United. He just... my sat top of the table. Let me fix my tie. Hold on.
For Don, is it harder to break down 10-man defensive team than a full team playing with regular formation and strategy? Asking about Chelsea, not Arsenal.
I see Jurgen Klopp got interviewed afterwards and he was trying to explain that it was harder playing against 10. And I think social media went wild because obviously everyone's thinking about 11 versus 11 is a tough game. Once the team goes down to 10, it should be easier. Theoretically, numbers-wise, it should be, but what subconsciously happens is when you're down to 10, you bank in. Chelsea had 8 players, outfield players behind the ball, so how do you break that down? You've got to move it quickly. And I think sometimes you've got to give credit to a team like Chelsea who are well-drilled. So it's tough, you know. It's one of them when you're on the pitch and you've got 11 versus 10. Because when we were at Liverpool with Graeme Souness, we used to do a drill where we'd practice going down to 10 because we had Neil Ruddock and we had Julian Dix at the time. And we used to practice playing 10 men against 11 and how and what you would do if we went down to 10 and how you would sort it out on the pitch. So straight away, subconsciously, you just go really deep and defend and try and hang on. And that's what Chelsea does.
Here we are, ladies and gentlemen. It is our daily Don percentage question.
Oh, no. I'm going to make a New Year's resolution, even though we're a mile off. I'm simplifying
even though we're in August.
Myself.
Even though we're
exactly.
in August.
Exactly. I'm simplifying this for myself from now on.
For Don, what's the percentage chance of United not winning a trophy with Ronaldo?
Ooh.
80. 80% chance he will not win a trophy with United. So what's the percentage chance?
This season, hold on, is it this season or?
No, forever.
Forever?
Yeah.
So what's he'll win them a trophy. He'll win them a trophy.
But you win 80. You went 80 that they...
They won't. We're under Ronaldo. Two seasons, they're not going to win silverware.
So 20% that they will.
Oh, I was going to ask him that. See if he... I was going to try and trick him. Oh,
he said that and then followed up with, yeah, they're going to win a trophy.
Yeah. I've actually got it the other way around.
Yeah. See, I told
should
you.
Should have been the other way around.
So 80% they're going to win a trophy with
they're
him.
They're going to win a trophy, yeah, with Ronaldo.
But you said 20%. Sure. 80%
I know. I got it the other way around. I was trying to simplify myself. It was the confusion... In the email. Who's that from?
In the email? How long have we been doing this segment?
I'll simplify it for you, Don. It's 100. Minus whatever you come up with. That's how you turn it around.
Put your house on it, Jack.
No, not.
Why is nobody talking about Musiala? He's one of the best young talents in world football, if not the best. We were talking about him just today.
We gave him mad love.
And so was Jurgen Klinsmann, Kay and everybody as well on our coverage.
Well, that tweet is just wrong, Don. I mean, Dan.
Careful.
It's just wrong.
Gab, why doesn't he get more attention than others?
He gets a ton of attention. I genuinely don't understand this. And he's going to get more attention now because, you know, the way Leroy Sané played last week and obviously didn't get the start this week, I think we're going to see a lot more of him playing more significant minutes for Bayern. And I think as Thomas Müller gets older, I think to some people, his future is in the Müller role. Obviously playing it differently, but playing in that attacking central midfield role.
Gab, with star players like Lukaku, Donnarumma and Ronaldo, among others leaving Serie A, who is now the face of the league and who do you think will be the breakout star this season?
Ooh, all right, well, my breakout star, he's already broken out, but he wasn't there last year. I'm putting all my chips on Nicolò Zaniolo because I think he is the most talented, probably the most talented Italian player in Serie A easily, in terms of raw talent. Whether Mourinho can get him to shine, whether he can come back so quickly, I don't know. But he's still only, 20 years old. The face of Serie A, Serie A has many faces right now. I could give you... I think Zlatan is probably the one who's gonna make the most noise. And obviously people are gonna point at him and, oh look, he's nearly 40, ha ha ha, retirement league. But you know what? There's a bunch of guys, Italy just won the Euros. So whether it's Federico Chiesa, whether it's Locatelli, whether it's Barella, whether it's Tammy Abraham maybe, there are people out there. But keep an eye on Vlahovic. I thought he scored a great goal today for Fiorentina. It looked like he was going to move this summer. Now Rocco Commisso saying he definitely won't. I don't know until the transfer window's open. I think anything can happen. But he is a stud and he's young and he's a very, very gifted player.
Final question. After learning Xhaka was at the wrong end of Ronaldo's first goal yesterday.
How are people just learning that?
Well, people joining us all the time, Shaq.
Am I unnecessarily angry about this?
No.
Okay.
I went and watched it for myself and was wondering what went wrong there, Shaka.
Well, he whipped the free kick in and it was Nigel...
So the free kick's right by the byline.
Free kick, so from my perspective, yes. It's wide out on my right-hand side. He whips it in right-footed. It just misses, I think it was Nigel Kwasi and Paul Scholes come in.
Nigel Kwasi, blimmin' it.
And they both miss the ball, but I have to play for the touch because Paul Scholes is coming in.
Right.
I have to play for the touch. They both miss it, sneaks into the far post.
So basically, you're not taking any responsibility for that goal.
Dan, you've known me how long now?
Yes, yeah, not long enough.
Well, why have I ever taken responsibility for anything?
Don, do you have any Ronaldo stories?
No.
Okay, good. That's it. That brings us to the end of Extra Time. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Be sure to join us. And of course, Manchester United in action without Cristiano Ronaldo.